The Monty Show, Monday, August 13th. We're back. Hey, baby. Hey. You know how you know this show is good, Jake? We were gone for an entire week on vacation, and we had the third biggest week the show's ever had for listens. Appreciate you all. Thank you so much for being a great part of this show. We have a huge show, as always. We got to talk Tiger. We got to talk Baker. We got to talk Bodie, Will Myers, and really, H.J. Preller. I don't know what you meant. I don't know what you're doing, man. We got to talk. We got to talk, H. We got to talk about Francis Bernard. We got to talk about Jordan McNair. If you don't know that name, you better get to know it. Elon Musk, LeBron James, and his crappy LeBron 15 low that almost broke my ankle this weekend. Oh, and James Harden started a new Olympic sport called cell phone throwing. Well, he did throw a cell phone, but it wasn't an Olympic sport.
And the Night King are good friends.
The Night King, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I like it, because we're going to talk Baker Mayfield, Hard Knocks, Ghost Adventures, and Max from Catfish.
Yeah.
So we've got some work to do here. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show is where you find us on Twitter. And somebody was asking me on Twitter the other day, well, where's your show? Where can I find your show? I listen all the time. I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to say it every show. It just is what it be. You can find us on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, absolutely positively search The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Jake, let's start talking some Tiger Woods, because I thought what he did at the PGA Championship this weekend was scintillating. He did not win it, but he came in second, and I think he brought us back to the Tiger Woods who hadn't gotten caught cheating on Elon yet.
Yeah.
And which seriously, I think we need to talk about that in a second. But he brought us back to what we all hoped he could be.
Right.
Do you believe that Tiger is quote unquote back? Did this cement that for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just over all the stuff he went through. I'm past it, frankly. Like, I just think that, like, he didn't beat anybody. Yeah, he cheated on Lindsay. He did, you know, he had sex with a ton of women. Like, I get it. It's not the best character move in the world. But you didn't beat anybody. You didn't beat your wife. You didn't, you know, commit domestic violence.
But like, people aren't over the philandering. People aren't over the cheating of Tiger Woods.
Well, I'm sorry, but frankly, like, there are bigger problems in the world. Like, get over it. Get over it. There are bigger problems in the world. Like, and we're going to talk about them on the show today. Like, I feel like Tiger's issues are different because he didn't beat anybody. He made bad decisions and he disrespected people, but like, you didn't kill anybody, you didn't rob anything, like, you just philandered. You cheated on your wife, you ruined your family.
He's cheated on every woman that he's ever been in a relationship with, by his own admission. But I think it's interesting that one of the headlines after the tournament ended yesterday was, well, who was that lady that Tiger kissed and who patted him on the ass as he walked in to turn in his scorecard? Who was that lady?
Yeah.
And it was his girlfriend. And people really care about that. It's awkward for me because I almost feel guilty that I don't think about it anymore. I don't think about when I'm watching Tiger on the course, I'm wondering how bad the drive's going to be. Well, and how awesome the scramble's going to be.
It's funny because, again, I have a bunch of people at work that play golf, right? And so we came in, of course, we're talking about it. And I said, Tiger is back, but Tiger is not past disaster every Sunday. There is always something.
Yeah.
Well, and you just know it's coming. Like,
but is it fair, though? You know, on Twitter, and maybe Twitter's not the best barometer, the best measure of this.
Are you sure?
Well, I mean, Twitter's pretty awesome. I could be wrong about that. I don't think I've ever been wrong in the past, but, you know. Anyway, the point is that Twitter is a wasteland. But RKB, the assassin.
His name hasn't come up for a while.
The chosen one, Ryan K. Barney on Twitter. Did you hear about the plane that crashed into the house in Payson, Utah?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is all related. Go with me here, folks. There's a plane that crashed into a house in Payson, and people are like, oh, that sucks. What a tragedy. Well, then we find out that it was a domestic violence issue. The guy that was piloting the plane flew the plane into his house to try and kill his family, allegedly. RKB, the Twitter assassin, as it turns out, has been flown by this guy. The guy who tried to kill his family with his plane was a pilot for a corporation and has flown our guy RKB before. How crazy is
good
that?
Good choice.
Not to say this, but RKB also says, screw Tiger Woods, I'll never root for him, because any man that cheats on his wife and forsakes his marriage and his family is worthless.
I mean, sure, go ahead.
Knock yourself out.
Worthless is very rich these days.
But no, but seriously, he essentially said any man that forsakes his family like that, I cannot root for. And he said, guy is three strokes off. They're saying this has got to be a make. Make plus the other guy comes back three strokes and three holes, which he was saying that Tiger was only in this tournament because Koepka got rattled, right? So it started with that. And then I just...
I mean,
I think people have not forgiven Tiger Woods.
Well, that's very clear, but I don't necessarily disagree that Tiger was only in this because Koepka was rattled.
I totally disagree with that.
Koepka did not execute on the green. If Koepka, literally, Koepka could have been 20 under.
Yeah,
literally.
He could have won by 6-7 strokes. But why did he miss those putts? Because what was going on with Tiger? Tiger had the largest galleries. Koepka, the final pairing, oddly enough, had very little media with them because they were all with Tiger. And if you look at the scorecards and you look at the way Koepka finished his front nine, Koepka very clearly struggled. When Tiger was doing well, Koepka bogeyed. When Tiger bogeyed, Koepka had three birdies. Problem is, Tiger added two birdies on top of that. It was very apparent that the loud roars from the Tiger galleries were affecting Koepka. There's no question about that. Adam Scott completely collapsed, finished third instead of second, and I think a lot of that was he was distracted.
Yeah.
But all Koepka had to do was play par golf, which for the most part he did.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he collapsed to bring Tiger back into it. I think Tiger mania and Tiger in a red shirt, black slacks with a huge gallery and all the media and the roars of the crowd, that's what brought Tiger back to Koepka. I don't think Koepka just got lazy and choked, or I think the Tiger effect had a real impact on Koepka.
But isn't that, I guess I feel like that's the same thing. He's saying that Koepka got rattled from Tiger being right there.
No, I think what he's saying is that Tiger needed help to get back into the tournament. Well, that might be true. He said, guy is three strokes off. They're saying this has got to be a make. Make plus the other guy comes back three strokes.
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt.
I think Koepka dropped strokes because he was nervous, because the crowds were rattling him in the roars, which they say everybody that was there was saying that you could hear the roars of the gallery around Tiger all over the course. And it's what I say, and you're probably too young to remember this. This is what Tiger Woods was for his entire prime. I mean, it was unbelievable. They lengthened Augusta National for Tiger Woods. You know, you don't see this with Jordan Spieth. You don't see this with Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
Fowler, Day.
Those guys don't have star power. You know they're great golfers, but they don't have Tiger star power.
And the other problem is, Jake, I don't think anybody believes that those players are better than Tiger Woods. I think a lot of people, and maybe Bruce, or maybe, I don't know, maybe Fowler's in this. Jordan Spieth, I think, certainly is in this. I'm trying to think of a young gun. And Brooks Koepka could be here. I think a lot of those guys think that Tiger's better than they are. Why has Ricky Fowler not won a major? Because he doesn't have it in his head to win a major yet. You know, like, does Dustin Johnson think that Tiger Woods is better? He'll never say that out loud, but there's a chance. When you hear Tiger's galleries and they're roaring and you're playing bogey golf, you think Tiger Woods is better than you. It's hard to get away from that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah. You were not watching the PGA, right, yesterday. We had played a bunch of basketball, and you were just kind of hanging out. And I said, hey, man, you better turn this on. You better turn this on. Then turn it on, and what happened? Did you watch it for the rest of the day?
Yeah.
You did. And I'm telling you, it'll change your life. Because now, every major, you're going to be watching. I'm telling you, because yeah, you mean, believe I, Tiger
yeah,
can win
look,
now.
I think we all do. I agree that Tiger's got the star power. He's got all the intangibles. He just can't finish it. Like right now, he can't finish.
Yep. His iron play is spectacular. What really encouraged me was he was making putts. Now, he missed not a gimme, but he missed a makeable putt for eagle and then came back and missed the birdie after missing the eagle and parred the hole. That can't happen. But you see Tiger Woods making putts again, mm-hmm. and there's fist pumps. I love that. And I hope that Tiger comes out next year. I would love to see him win three more majors next year. I'd love to see that happen next year so that another generation of golf fans is born, because that's what this sport is missing. And I know this is going to piss a lot of people off. The PGA needs Tiger Woods. Whether you begrudge him for it or not, he needs to be, in my opinion, he needs to be playing international golf. He needs to be good enough to be on the Ryder Cup team. That's huge for that event, for the Ryder Cup. If Tiger Woods is carrying the U.S., that's huge. He needs to whoop Phil Mickelson's ass at Thanksgiving when they play one-on-one. He needs to show Phil Mickelson that he's done. Phil's done because he can't compete with Tiger anymore. And he can't. And why is that? Because Tiger, he said yesterday, I don't know how I'm doing this. I have a fused back. Nobody's ever done what I'm doing. I've had to completely relearn the game of golf. And boy, it's worked out fantastically well.
I agree. I mean, I totally agree. I think, you know, that mental edge that you have over someone like Phil Mickelson, who's a legend of the sport, essentially. I mean, that's who he is, like a legacy guy. You know, if you're edging him mentally, I mean, you're at a great place in your game. But I think now, you know, that's why I said, like, I don't necessarily disagree with the idea that Koepka, you know, if Koepka's playing his best golf, he runs away with that tournament. Like, I feel like that the Tiger effect is just not on the players. It's on the media, too. Like, we're so obsessed with what he's doing that we can't even acknowledge the fact that Koepka, like, didn't even have the best round of golf he's ever had and still won.
CBS had the PGA Championship, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like to say thank God, because all major golf tournaments should be on CBS. No offense, Joe Buck, but you're a terrible play-by-play guy, in my opinion. And I can't stand watching Fox on cover golf. It's terrible. I love CBS. And why? Because what were they saying? It's a shame that the media is not with Koepka. That's a shame because he's playing incredible golf. But the Tiger effect is real and it's important. You're exactly right about that. Because I think golf is frankly right where NASCAR is. If Tiger comes back and wins two majors next year, contends at every major, let's say just wins two of them, golf takes a step forward. The ratings, which were, you know, some of the best ratings the tournament's ever seen, the PGA Championship's ever seen, and the only guy beating Tiger's ratings this year is Tiger in his prime. The ratings go up. More people are buying Tiger Woods clothing. More people are buying, you know, Big Bertha drivers and Callaway golf balls, and more people are on the course playing the game. That's what golf needs. NASCAR, in my opinion, is in real trouble.
Well, they don't have their Tiger. That guy's sitting in the, you know, the announcing box.
Yeah, Dale. It's an interesting thing because we watch a ton of NASCAR as well. I don't know who the next big thing in NASCAR is. I thought that it'd be Chase Elliott. He won last week, and it was barely a blip on the radar outside of the motor racing world. To me, I'm a Chase guy. I'm a big fan. I loved it. Nobody cared. You know, and I think the problem is we all in NASCAR got really excited about the Eric Joneses of the world and the Chase Elliotts of the world and the, you know, the William Byrons of the world, this group of young guys, the Dillons, that were coming up. And none of them have stepped forward. None of them. Kyle Larson has not stepped forward. So who do we have winning races? Kevin Harvick ran away with Michigan.
Easily.
So it's Kyle Busch. It's Harvick. I mean, it is Martin Truex. It's these same three, four guys. Every single week.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hurting the sport because there's no young superstar. They're not great interviews. Chase Elliott's a terrible interview. If you put him on the radio, you and I have done that. You put Chase Elliott on the radio, it's paint drying. Yeah. Ryan Blaney's paint drying.
Even if you ask a great question, easy question, like elaborate on it, it's terrible.
Paint drying.
Yeah.
You know, Erik Jones was here in Phoenix. We talked to him one-on-one.
Tiny dude.
Paint drying. Like, Kyle Busch, riveting. Kevin Harvick, great interview. Dale, great interview. There's nothing. The next generation has arrived, and they're not here. That's, I think, the real problem. Anyway, here, no there. I think golf really needs Tiger, and I thought this was a huge, huge weekend for golf and for Tiger Woods because it'll bring people back to the television next year. Also huge, huge moment, I thought, was David Bodie last night. A Sunday that I thought was going to be mediocre was anything but mediocre. I think the PGA Championship, I think some baseball that was going on, and I think Sunday night baseball really needed this moment at Wrigley Field.
David Bodie now ready to keep the trying to keep the Cubs alive. A long ball now could win the ball game. And the pitch on the way. Bodie drives one in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Taylor. It's got a chance.
It's a grand slam. A grand slam for David Bodie. And the Cubs have won the ball game. Can you believe it?
Wow. As soon as he hit it, he knew it was gone. He started pointing in the air. Cubs win in a grand slam.
Oh, my. What a moment. Chicago Cubs Radio Network, 670, the score in Chicago. I mean, that was unbelievable. We're going to play that highlight again for you here in a second. I want you to listen to the crack of the bat, the moment, the great Pat Hughes on the score in Chicago is who had that call, Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes. It's that moment that can only happen in baseball. And there's something very special about the youth in their voice. But the thing that really stands out to me, and maybe, Jake, I'm just being an idiot as a baseball fan, the crack of the bat on this highlight is truly amazing.
Ready to keep the trying to keep the Cubs alive. A long ball now
listen
could win
bat.
The ball game. And the pitch on the way. Bodie drives one in the air. Deep center field. Back goes Taylor. It's got a chance. It's a grand slam.
A grand slam for David Bodie. And the Cubs have won the ball game. Can you believe it?
Wow.
I mean, it's just a fantastic call of a home run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... I thought Vasgersian did a great job when he said, this is Cubs magic. Or maybe it was A-Rod, I can't remember. But they mentioned on ESPN right after that. They said, this is the 2016 stuff that the Cubs haven't had. Like, this is one of those moments.
Man.
And I'm not saying this moment, like, propels them into the playoffs or changes their season. But it's nice to have moments like this out of guys like Bodie.
Think about what that is, though. It's a grand slam. You're down 3-0. Your newly acquired Cole Hamels has dueled head-to-head with Max Scherzer. The Cubs wind up giving it up. You know, Brandon Kinsler comes in for the Cubs, the former Nat, winds up giving up the two runs. You're hopeless. And then as the inning unfolded, Defoe made an error. Ryan Madsen is pitching. He hits a couple of guys. The bases are loaded. There's two outs. It's a 2-2 pitch. And the impossible happens. And it's that...
And it's not even a bad pitch. That's the best part. It wasn't even, like, it was... He had to go and get that ball.
Yeah, he didn't pipe it. It wasn't right down the middle. It was low.
I mean, it was center cut, but it was low.
No, obviously, Madsen's a hard thrower, so that didn't hurt. But, I mean, it's tremendous. And then the thing that was really cool, and if you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, all of the video and the pictures, the photography that was produced out of that moment, there's a shot from the left field corner of Bodie hitting third base, and he's got his arms out to the side. Like, imagine you're an airplane.
Yeah.
And he's rounding third base, and the entire Cub dugout is at home plate. It's high school baseball.
Yeah.
But you know what I thought was even more than that? And... I think it was David Haw on the score in Chicago this morning I listened to on the radio.com
app.
Me too. On the score this morning, he said this is wiffle ball in your backyard. Because what does everybody dream about? There's two outs. The bases are loaded. And I'm going to go up here and I'm going to jack a grand slam. And we're going to win the game.
And then apologize for bat flipping.
Which we're going to get to in a minute. Good Lord. But it was that special moment that made us all kids again.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like hearing them say that on the radio this morning actually brought me back to my backyard in Northbrook, Illinois. Because we played wiffle ball. And we had an actual home plate area. We put a tarp over it and everything. And we used to put duct tape around one of those yellow wiffle ball bats.
Yeah.
And we would sometimes put duct tape around the wiffle ball. Or hell, sometimes just play with a league ball. And we broke a few windows doing that. But it's just moments. It's fighting Ryan Zagorski, who was a high school friend of mine. Round Lake Beach, Illinois. We had a huge field in the middle of this townhouse complex I grew up in. And I used to hit with wood bats. We'd play fast pitch with a tennis ball. And I would hit with a wood bat. I got a brand new wood bat. He threw it into a puddle and boy, I beat his ass for that. But it brought me back to that. And that those fun moments that you remember. I remember there used to be a house way out in center field when I was a kid. And one of the first home runs I ever hit was at Daniel Wright Middle School in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And there was a huge shed in center field, like one of those aluminum sheds.
Yeah.
And I hit a monster home run, or what I thought was a monster home run. I'm sure it was 150 feet at this point. But it hit that shed, and it's like the shed exploded. You know, it's those moments. I remember my teammate Cliff Cano, who I'm still friends with on Facebook, believe it or not. But I remember Cliff Cano hitting a home run off a light pole at that same field. Like, that's what it brings me back to. You know, and it's why I love playing adult baseball. It's why I love playing softball. Because everybody's David Bodie. And everybody wants to be in that situation.
Yeah.
And it just feels so good. It feels so good. Anyway. And then he hits the home run, right? And you hear the bat crack that we played for you twice. It was gone the minute he hit it. And he held the home run pose. And then casually rolled the bat off of his fingers. It wasn't a huge bat flip.
No, I thought it was very stylish. Thought it was very, it was perfect.
He apologized for bat flipping. And if any disrespect was felt by the Nationals, he's sorry. Because he got pressured. There was a bunch of, you know, a-holes on Twitter again. The Village Idiots were out. And frankly, the Nationals did not complain about that. And I just didn't think it was an issue.
I didn't think it was egregious at all, honestly.
You hit a walk-off grand slam in the pennant race.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was one of the most clutch plays I've seen this year out of anybody, number one. Number two, I thought it wasn't the Jose Bautista bat flip against Dyson, you know, when he was on the Blue Jays. That was not what that was. That was a beautiful high finish on a low fastball. You just flipped it with your wrist. Solid bat flip. And you did the Sammy Sosa, jump.
It was the Mark McGwire high finish, drop the bat behind your back.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And there was no problem with it. If you were pissed about the bat flip, I'm just curious, what did you think about him running the bases, jumping up and down? Yeah. What did you think about him rounding third base as an airplane? What did you think about him throwing his helmet way up in the air? What did you think about every single one of his teammates and everybody in the city of Chicago, every Cub fan from around the world? What did you think about those guys all ripping his jersey off at home plate?
It was awesome.
It's that. That's what baseball in August is about.
Yeah.
You've been sputtering all season long.
Yeah.
And you hit a walk-off grand slam when you were down 3-0. And for the second time, you hit a game-winning grand slam this year. Jason Hayward hit the first one. But Bodie hits this second one, and they win 4-3. Who cares? Do whatever you want to do. You earned that right. Yeah. By the way, you don't want him to flip his bat?
Don't make an error.
Don't hit two guys, make an error, and then throw him a fastball. Sorry.
I was surprised they threw him a fat. But again,
well, it was 2-2.
But at the same time, you're up 3-0. Like, I still think I would rather walk a guy in than give it up.
You know what else I thought was interesting in that moment? Bryce Harper walking off the field watching the replay.
He wasn't even sad. It wasn't sadness. I felt like when I was looking at him, there was a little bit, like a slight bit of admiration There was a lot of bit of frustration.
Oh, you have to tip your cap, by the way.
But right, but then I think there was sort of a look to the future. You could kind of see him like, wow, this is like that was a hell of a moment. This club isn't producing moments like that. Like that's not who we are. You know? And then you see Matt Adams crying on the bench. Like, you know, I don't know. It was just the way he was. There's no like tangible way to prove that's what he was thinking, but you could just see it. Yeah. Like that's just what it was on his face.
Because I know this is going to come off as the arrogant Cub fan, and I know my LA and San Diego listeners. You already give me a little bit of that on Twitter, and I'm fine with it. That moment only happens at Wrigley Field. Because where else are you going to have a moment like that? That ballpark is it's so intimate. And, you know, he didn't even hit first base and Go Cubs Go was playing in the background. And you just are not going to have that kind of amperage. Even though they've completely changed the lower bowl at Wrigley Field, the fans are still right there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was a big concern of mine when we heard, hey, the renovations are going to start. We're taking the bullpens off the field.
We're expanding the bleachers and putting in, you know, massive scoreboards.
You know, we're changing right field. Like, I really felt like that could take away from some of the character that ballpark has, but it hasn't. It honestly hasn't, and I don't think...
It's remarkable.
I really don't think it's going to lose the old school feel unless... you know, like one thing that would really change that ballpark is if you took away the ivy and the brick wall and you changed the outfield fence.
Can't do that.
You can't do that. Like that's not Wrigley anymore, you know? And if that ever comes, that'll be a shame. You know, like you can't change the center field scoreboard. Can't do that. You know,
can't do it.
Like I think they've done a great job keeping the little things and keeping that ballpark retro.
They're up 3 in the Central. They're 19 games above 500. By the way, the Boston Red Sox are 50 over 500.
None of that's going to matter when they get eliminated.
But damn, bro. 50 over 500.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So sure David Price is going
to
suck.
No, I'm so sure that they're not going to win. I don't think they're going to win. I think they're going to dominate the first round. And I don't think they're winning the World Series because you know why I think that? Because
do they get to the World Series?
Yeah, they get to the World Series, I think. But I think baseball inevitably finds a way to crown the most unexpected team. When it was Dodgers Astros, who'd we think was gonna win that?
Oh, the Dodgers.
Kershaw was gonna dominate.
No.
He got lit. You know, like that's what I'm saying. Like, so it's great that they're 50 over. It's great that you've had this great year and JD Martinez has been exactly what you thought he'd be instead of a bust. Like that's great. You're not the Cub. Like, you're not having this moment.
Yeah. How about the Oakland A's are 22 over?
Again, a nice story. Now, that's a team I could see making some noise.
Yeah. But I look at the Cubs right now. They're 3 up.
Big boy series starts tomorrow.
Yeah. Are they better than the Brewers?
Well, we'll find out. We're going to find out. Because I think, you know, so it was Cole Hamels yesterday. You know, so they're going to have the meat of their rotation going. Which is a little scary.
He delivered.
Oh, for sure he did. But I'm just saying for the Brewers series, they're going to have, you know.
Quintana, Hendricks, Lester.
It's a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's only a 2-gamer, so you're going to get Quintana, Hendricks.
Yeah, but it's still a massive series.
Yeah. Chacin and Guerra.
Let's be real clear.
For Milwaukee.
Let's be real clear. They could have a 5-game lead or a 1-game lead.
I think it's going to be 4 games. And we're going to go to Wednesday. And that Wednesday game, both of them are day games, 120 local. They're going to win that first game because I think Quintana is pitching for a spot in the rotation in the postseason. And he really wants to be a postseason performer.
I agree with that.
I think he's going to pitch well, and then it's going to be Kyle Hendricks, who's also pitching for his postseason life. Now, Kyle's going to determine, do we leave the way we came, which is 3 up, or do we go out of here 5 up? And I think at Wrigley Field, it's going to be awfully difficult for Milwaukee to win that second game. I think that if they win tomorrow, I think there's a real good chance they're 5 up. But they're going to win tomorrow. I think they're going to be 4 up. And then I think Wednesday is going to be a dogfight. And then they go on this road trip to Pittsburgh where can we just contract the Pittsburgh Pirates? Because the Cubs cannot beat the Pirates. I mean, they just can't. I don't even know how you explain that. But anyway, here nor there, I think the Hamels trade is much better than I thought it would be. I was not enthused about it. He's been the best pitcher in baseball.
Was it 2 starts now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. and he's been unfreaking believable. And that last night to not get the win is a tragedy.
Yeah, but I think,
boy, did he do the
job. Yeah, I mean, again, so much as being that's the life of a pitcher, though. I mean, I think you as a starting pitcher, especially this year for the Cubs, you got the win last night. You did your job. You kept him in that game. You know, there's nothing else you're going to do.
Yeah. I wonder who this team is, though, the Cubs. Because I saw them, and we're going to talk about the Padres here in a second, but I go back to that Padres series where they split, and they looked terrible splitting with the Padres. And I don't know how to explain that. They took 2 of 3, but ho-hum, they lost 9-0 to the Royals in the third game of that series when he had a chance to sweep them. Oh, and it's because Quintana was terrible.
Yeah.
And then you take 2 of 3 from Washington. Now you got Milwaukee coming in for a real tester of a series. And it'll be interesting to see. I do want to get to the Padres, though, because, you know, watching every game pretty much that the Padres play at this point, I don't understand this Will Myers experiment. And some things came out today that I thought was really surprising. Not only did they send Will Myers to a rehab start, a stint, really. He played one game at third base.
Mm-hmm.
And got a ground ball that was on tape. One of the great Padre fans videotaped a ground ball that he took, and it was awkward. His glove was in the wrong position. His footwork was not great, and he has a real long release from third base. Now they call him up and activate him. They send Desuahe out, which is fine. They call him up, and they're going to play him at third base. And to accommodate that move to third base, they're going to play Villanueva at second base. And I'm just saying to myself, where's Urias?
Yeah, I mean, I think it raises real questions about their trajectory, their path.
Their commitment to Urias.
I think it's further than that. I think it raises questions to your commitment to develop guys on the right timeline. Because if you're going to keep him down the rest of the year, which is clearly what they're going to do now, in my opinion.
Wow, you don't even think he gets
September. I don't think he gets a sniff. Maybe he might play a few innings, but really, what is that like? But seriously, in real world terms, like, what does that do for you as a player? Okay, I got 10 games, like, you know, like that. It's just not tangible. It's not like, you know, that's not like great experience.
Oh,
for the guy.
There's a huge risk in it, because if they call him up, he needs to play every day for the rest of the season. He won't. Because they want him, in my opinion, to do just well enough that they can trade him. That's what I feel like. What other message are we supposed to take out of this? That you're going to move Will Myers to third base, which, again, I am 100% against. Then you are going to put Villanueva at second. And I understand that the last 6 weeks of the season, you're committed to experimenting and trying guys and trying to figure out, you know, X, Y, and Z. Okay, I get that. But that's not how you are as a ball club. Okay, if you're trying Will Myers at third base, at this point, here's where the Padres need to be. If you're trying Will Myers at third base, that says you're not committed to Christian Villanueva. Okay? All right, great. I get that. I don't think he's special.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I don't think he's special. But that doesn't mean that you move Villanueva to second base and you leave Urias at AAA, because he's not getting better at AAA. Right now, he is a 4A player at AAA. And well, in my opinion, I don't know that we'll ever know him any differently unless the Padres do what they should do, which is stay committed to their young guys. And if you're not committed to Villanueva, who's a young guy who's hit a bunch of bombs for you, I don't understand this desire to bring Will Myers into third base. Has he not done the job in the corners? Are you more committed to a guy like Franmil Reyes, who's a DH? Because he's not an outfielder, not at the big league level. You already know that Franchi Cordero is probably one of your four future outfielders. Too bad he's hurt. But you probably already know that. I would assume Margot is part of your future, I would guess.
Yeah.
But why would Will Myers not be your left fielder? Why? Like, what is it that Will Myers has done? Is it because he gets hurt a lot?
It could be. I mean, I think it's also, I think they see what the Cubs do with Chris Bryant, and they want to be able to do that. you know?
But Will Myers is not that guy. Will Myers is a hell of an athlete.
Well, they're going to try and make him that guy.
Will Myers will never do well with change. He that's just not who that guy is, in my opinion. And I don't know Will personally, but he needs to know, hey, man, you're going to play first base every day and you're going to bat third. Okay, great. That's who Will Myers is. He isn't a guy that needs to play left or right or third or first. So leave him in left field. Bat him second. He's been all right second. Bat him third. Bat him fourth. I don't care. The guy's going to hit bombs. He's going to give you 20 every year. Now, maybe it is that he's too injury prone running around in the outfield. All right, he's got this oblique thing. Okay, now he's got this foot thing. Okay. That's who he is. Why are we already giving up on Christian Villanueva? He can't even get a full season at third base? Okay, great. You're giving up on him? I'm telling you right now, Tatis is a third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a shortstop in the big leagues. He is going to be a third baseman. So why are we dicking around with all these guys at third base? You know, like, leave Villanueva there. Let him play his way out of a third base job next year. Let him play his way out. Why Will Myers? Like, what sense does this make? Help me understand that.
I think it's very simple. This is what I'm saying. You disagree with it, but this is what I think it is. They want flexibility. They want him to get time at third. They need him to be able to come into the infield and play if they have
just
an injury.
Just because. I don't think that's what it is, by the way, that they just want to, if they get an injury.
It?
I don't know.
Well, then how do you know that that's not what it is? I think that's what it is.
That doesn't make sense to me. Because you've got how many guys on this roster can play third base?
But they're not Will Myers. Not everybody's Will Myers. You're not committed to everybody for 6-7 seasons. Like,
but A.J. Preller, I think he's smarter than this. That's why this is not – there's no analytics. So you can't tell me this is a sabermetrics thing. There's no analytics, it says. There's no common sense. There's no, like –
I disagree with that. I think there is – if you want positional flexibility, there is some sense in it. If you want him to get time at the end of the year at third base just because, okay, throw him over there. You're awful already. So it's not really going to hurt you in the standings. Like, I get that it hinders other guys, but they're clearly not committed to Urias at this point. If you're committed to him, he's been here already. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You told me, I can't, in July, like, no, wait, they'll bring him up. No, they're like, he should have been up in the end of June.
In May.
I'd have brought him up at the end of June because at that point, you're out of it. I think you're out of it at that point. You can't bring him up and put those expectations on him. I think at the end of June, early July, right around the All-Star break, you're out of it at that point. Bring him up. Let him get work, you know? But at this point, you haven't brought him up, so you've missed your window. So at this point, you're going to bring him up for the end of the year, which is not nearly enough time for him to get, like, real tangible experience and feel good about himself.
But is this because Will Myers is AJ's guy?
Yeah, I mean, could be.
Is that because we're going to have this Austin Hedges conversation as well?
I just want to say, I hate GMs like that. Oh, you're my guy, so that means I'm going to keep you. That's not how it should work.
Right.
It's not how it should work.
I mean, everybody wants to see Mejia catch every day. And I'm just saying, by the way, Austin Hedges is hitting now. He's catching really well now, calling a good game. Lucchese looked really good. Like, the pitchers like throwing to him very clearly. Everything's going fine. And now you're going to play Will Myers at third base. And you're not, by the way, going to give Urias full run. You're not. And I don't understand it. This team is right where they should be.
No,
the record
anything. I think at this point, this is a mistake. And you're earning your way into being a bad team next year. You not so much, but I've heard a lot of Padre people say they're going to be competitive. They're coming. Like, they're going to be competitive in 2020, 2021. Like, they're coming. All the young guys are coming up next year. And I'm just saying that's not going to happen. It's not going to be as successful as everybody thinks it's going to be.
They're going to have great pitching next year. They're going to be – I shouldn't say great pitching. They're going to be a much better team on the mound next year. I have no idea what these nine guys are going to look like. I'm going to guess that –
That's a real problem.
That's a huge problem. Because I can tell you right now, it should be Galvis, Urias, and Haas at first base. It should be those three guys. And I'm telling you right now, Hedges should be behind the plate. And I don't know what you want to do at third base.
I just think it's so easy. I don't know how they're messing this up. Like, You have your pitching lined up. You've got a great catcher behind the plate. You may not like the way he hits, but catchers aren't paid to hit. They're paid
and
to call
games
and play
now.
Defense. And that's great. That's cherry on top is my point.
Yes,
with
I would agree.
That's cherry on top. So you've got a great catcher, in my opinion. Great catcher. I think you've got good pitching coming, and I think they've shown you spots of, you know, brilliance. The Lowers of the world have shown you that they have it in them. And then you've got all this young
talent. And
don't
forget, you don't even have Lamet right now.
You don't have, and that's what I'm saying. You've got Mackenzie Gore coming up the pipeline. Like, you've got these guys coming. And you could solidify your infield, and you're not going to do it.
And yet, you're going to mess around at third base. You have now, I think, created huge questions at second base. And you are not committed to somebody else's catcher in Austin Hedges, because he's not your guy.
So you're going to do all of this. And then you're going to charge people more money to go to the game. And then you're going to say, you know, yeah, we're going to be competitive. And then you're going to wonder why the stadium's not full.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I think they're going to be a better baseball team next year. I really do.
They're not going to be good enough to change people's minds. They're going to be good enough for baseball peers to see it.
Yeah. I just have a lot of questions. Like, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I'm so frustrated with the Padres right now. This whole Will Myers thing, I'm on board. I am a supporter of the San Diego Padres and their youth movement and this development project. I am all about that.
But that all sounds cute and fancy and frilly. But if you mess it up, it doesn't matter.
Until they move Will Myers to third and Villanueva to second.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's like, okay, like I wavered on the Hedges thing, but I'm like, all right. He's a catcher. I get it. Mejia is a guy that can rake for days, and they say working on his framing and his okay. I can almost live with that. And then I say to myself, all right, because you're going to have a Gold Glove infield for 5 to 7 years. And now we're putting a guy at third base who's never played there consistently at this level, is getting a game or two at third base in a rehab assignment, and now all of a sudden he's a third baseman. And his glove's in the wrong direction. His delivery to first is way wrong. And I'm just like, why? Why the carnival? Oh, and then you're going to play Villanueva at second base. Now it's just off the rails. Because if Arias is not here, I'm telling you, they don't believe in that kid. They don't. They don't believe in him. I do want to talk about Hard Knocks. Because we watched Hard Knocks over the weekend. And you're really into this season of Hard Knocks already, one episode deep.
I've always loved Hard Knocks.
But do you like the storylines, the Hugh Jackson's mom and brother, Baker Mayfield? The thing that stood out to me, and I know there were a bunch of other storylines and Jarvis Landry and all that good crap, Baker Mayfield is already a quarterback. He is further along than Johnny Manziel ever was as a Cleveland Brown. And we're 2 weeks in the training camp.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge storyline to me. Landry's amazing. But there aren't a whole lot of things that make me want to watch the show every week right now. I need major development.
I don't know. I love watching the show even if it sucks. I mean, I think it's just such a great, like, the way HBO handles it, the way it's shot, like, it's beautiful, man. I mean, it's a great piece. I think it gives you the perspective and it gives you an understanding of, like, hey, these are human beings. Like, these are people we're talking about when we do the show. Like,
yep.
You know, and I think we forget that. And I think when we talk about, when I say, hey, I'm not a football fan for the most part. I don't enjoy the game when we're talking about, hey, this dude's dying at a young age.
This Maryland story we're going to talk about in a minute.
The Maryland thing. Like, all this, I've said it so many times, I'm sorry, but football is a negative sport all the way around. The only time there's a positive connotation to the sport is when Tom Brady does something magnificent or when Jarvis Landry is blessing people on the field.
Like, and catching the ball one-handed plays.
The on-the-field stuff is very much, I would say, 90% negative and about 10% positive. And that's what I struggle with.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Episode 2, I'm looking forward to it. I love Hard Knocks, just like you, but this season hasn't been incredibly compelling to me. This story at Maryland, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because we don't know how this is going to play out yet. If you don't know this story, I'm just going to tell you to buckle up because it's a heavy story that Jake mentioned. They had an offensive lineman named Jordan McNair, and Jordan McNair was doing a conditioning test in May. and he suffered from heat stroke. All right, heat stroke is not uncommon in football. There are, I mean, just dozens and dozens and dozens of cases around the country every single year. Maryland completely botched his care, allegedly. And this story is really, really difficult to handle. So as the story goes, he's doing a conditioning test. He is an offensive lineman. At 5 o'clock, this kid, Jordan McNair, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so the peak heat of the day, suffers heat stroke. And the problem is he didn't show up at the emergency room for an hour and 36 minutes. And when he finally did show up to the emergency room, he had a temperature of 106, which, depending on who you believe and what you read about, you're essentially cooking yourself on the inside at 106 degrees. Remember, your normal body temperature is 98.6. It took them 12 minutes to lower his body temperature to an acceptable place where he could live. The problem is it had been an hour and 36 minutes since he suffered a seizure. So long before the seizure, your body's already in trouble. So it's probably at least 2 hours that he was at an elevated temperature, and sadly, it killed him. And now their head coach at Maryland, DJ Durkin, and three staff members have been suspended. And they're trying to figure out if Maryland knew what to do when a player had heat stroke on the field.
Wait. We're trying to figure out if they knew what to do.
Yes.
But I thought you said it was an hour and 36 minutes till he got to the hospital.
His first seizure occurred at 5 o'clock, according to the University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
He did not get to the hospital until 6:36. An hour and 36 minutes from the seizure to the time he got to the hospital. So, and what they're saying is that had they done this hydrotherapy, which was when you have a heat stroke, and I am not kidding, this is as serious as I can say this. When you have heat stroke, you immediately need to get in cold water and ice. It's essentially an ice bath. And what it does is it almost immediately stops damage from occurring and lowers your body temperature to a point where your brain and your organs stop boiling, as it was explained this morning on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the level that this got to. This kid very clearly was in trouble for a very long time. And there was no, apparently, and this is what they're investigating, the allegation is there was no medical professional on the field who knew what to do. Because the Corey Stringer Institute, which is in Connecticut, do you remember Corey Stringer? You probably don't. Corey Stringer was an offensive lineman for the Vikings who died of heat stroke. And there were lawsuits and all this stuff. They formed an institute after his death. And they tracked this stuff. And they say that if you immediately do this cold therapy where you put him in an ice bath, you will survive and you will fully recover.
Yeah.
It's a problem, but it's not catastrophic. This kid died in 2018. At the University of Maryland.
It's embarrassing.
It's tragic. It's awful. It's horrendous. It's... And the thing is, what are we all worried about? Like, this kid's doing a conditioning test in May at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, and this, did I just say, like, why are we letting kids play football?
Ugh.
Like,
there it is. That's a heavy statement for you to make.
I think it's accurate. Let me just go down the list here. So, okay, Jimmy. Okay, son. So you want to play football, full contact football, from the age of 6, let's say, because, you know, that's pretty much the acceptable age, the youngest age. So your brain's going to take a beating. You're probably going to break your arm or sustain some kind of injury at some point that you're going to have to go through and experience. Okay, great. I'm fine with that. So your brain's going to take a beating. Your body's going to take a beating. At some point now, I have to worry when I send you off to college that's going to absolutely annihilate my pocketbook, that you're going to die on a field because the coaching staff slash the medical staff slash the NCAA slash the institution can't handle itself. Why would I let a kid play football? When's the last time you heard of a kid dying on an ice hockey rink? When's the last time you heard of a kid dying during a conditioning test for a basketball program? Yeah. Anything. Like,
And let's be real honest about this. Death in sports happens.
For sure.
It happens. We, you know, whether it's, you know, it's, you can, Reggie Lewis with the heart. I mean, there are Hank Gathers.
Can't remember the guy's name. The Dallas Stars hockey player dies on the bench for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Comes back in the game.
It happens.
Like, yeah.
This death at Maryland was 100% preventable. They say
never happened.
They say that if you have a seizure from heat stroke, you should not die. The problem is he had the seizure at 5 o'clock and they didn't even make a 911 call till 5:57.
Which is amazing to me. Like,
and they're estimating.
Like, what's the logic?
That's what they're trying to figure out. Because you had personnel on the field. Why didn't they treat the kid?
And this is what I always get to. Every time, and I'm sorry, it's always football, but seemingly it's always football. Why is it that these guys are just suspended? Why are you not out of your job? Like, why are you not out of your job? It's like, whether it's winning games, whether
that's
it's...
That's it right there.
But I think it's more than that, though. Like, yes,
is it?
Oh, for sure it is.
Is it with Urban Meyer?
No, but this is what I'm getting to, though. Wait, when it's not just about winning. Urban still has his job because he's Urban Meyer. He's got a legacy. The guy's proved himself so much to a point that universities, the Ohio State, is willing to take a beating in their image to keep him.
But why this DJ Durkin kid? He's young. This coach is not experienced. Nobody knows who the hell DJ Durkin is. But yet, I get Will Muschamp the other day at South Carolina saying this is the media's fault. The media is blowing the story out of proportion.
And you know where that comes from? Trump's America.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from.
Yeah. Fake news. Sorry, this isn't fake news. There's a 19-year-old that's dead because people on the field at Maryland didn't know what to do. 57 minutes before they
cooked
called
alive.
911. Huh?
Cooked alive.
Yeah. 57 minutes. They're estimating that his highest body temperature was 110 degrees.
It seems comfortable.
Yeah, your brain, they're saying that your brain is marinating. Your brain is cooking at 110 degrees.
Yeah.
Like that's, and so my point is, why was this, and I know you got to go through the process. If the decision wasn't made already to fire DJ Durkin, there's a problem.
Somebody died on your football field.
From what looks to be complete malpractice, from anybody in a medical certification.
Clearly, I'm not saying that the head football coach should know what to do because he's
not
trained.
Oh, he absolutely has to know what to do. No. The head football coach, Jake, has to know what to do, in my opinion. Why do you say
Because he's not a trained medical professional. The guy coaches football.
I totally disagree.
Why do we have medical staffs? Why do we have medical staffs?
Yeah, I'm not saying he's the end-all, be-all, but he if you are a major D1, hell, if you're a high school football coach, if you're a Pop Warner football coach, and you can't recognize a heat stroke or that a kid is seizing from heat stroke, and they say that the signs are very clear when heat stroke is setting, it's coming on, the signs are very clear. As a football coach, I think at any level in this country, you better damn well know how to identify it and treat it. We hear all this BS about, well, we're making men. Well, Kalani Sitake makes men. I guarantee you, Kalani or Witt or Clay Helton or any of those.
They may all have knowledge in it, but they're not getting paid to know how to treat it. They're getting paid to win games. It's that simple.
It's semantical to argue by, but I know what you're saying.
Like, they're not, it's not their responsibility. On paper, it's not their responsibility to know how to treat that. Yes, should they know? Yes. Should I know how to put a fire out in my backyard?
If a kid is doing a conditioning test on May 29th in Maryland,
there should be a full medical staff.
Oh
there.
My God! Like I mean, come on. We've watched conditioning tests in person, and whether it's I've seen it in basketball, and there's a ton of medical staff there. I mean, come on. I can't imagine this in the programs that I've covered in recent times: Stanford, Cal. Utah, BYU,
GCU
basketball. They always have people standing there just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
That's what I'm saying. That's what the indiscretion is here. How do you not have somebody there?
Well, the problem is it sounds like they did.
Okay, let me rephrase. How do you not have the right person there?
I think, but my point is this is why he's got to be fired. You hired a guy that didn't have infrastructure in place. My belief is that Corey Stringer should have ended this. The death of Corey Stringer should have ended this. You know, and this is why the Urban Meyer thing today. The update is that he didn't know this same assistant coach who was, allegedly beating his wife. And I say allegedly because, we haven't seen a conviction, and allegedly beating his wife also had a DUI. It came out today and Urban didn't know about it.
Sure.
Like, come on. You haven't fired Urban Meyer yet. You kept a guy on staff who had a DUI. You kept a guy on staff that you knew had a domestic incident, more than one domestic incident. I mean, we're only doing this, and maybe you're right. Maybe Urban's just too big for football. I don't know.
I think he's just too big for people in person. They're intimidated. They don't want to say, "Hey, Urban, sorry, man, you're not bigger than us. You're not bigger than the right thing to do."
Didn't fire Joe Paterno.
Exactly. That's exactly perfect example, dude.
Did not fire Tom Izzo. Didn't fire him. Did not fire, like, Baylor. We could go on. Dude, look at all the Big Ten schools. Michigan State, Ohio State, Maryland. And that's just scratching the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we care so much about winning that we're not going to fire.
We're not going to do the right thing.
We're going to let Pete Carroll walk away. We're not going to fire him. We're going to fire Lane Kiffin on the tarmac in the bus because he's an a-hole. But, Pete Carroll had one of his players taking money, living in a house, driving cars, had the basketball program handing money out to people on the street corner in Brentwood at USC. That happens. Hey, by the way, Louisville, Rick Pitino got a lady pregnant, extramarital affair in an Italian restaurant. No, we can't fire Rick Pitino. Like, come on. Oh, by the way.
But what's the difference?
A couple years later, Rick Pitino got caught in an FBI scandal. Oh, we got to fire him for that. Come on. I don't know. What is the difference?
Somebody died.
And he's not fired. He's not, like, right? Like, and DJ
Somebody's
Durkin is just
dead.
Suspended. Like, I think there should be a new rule. If a kid in your program dies, you're going to have to go. You're going to have to go.
Like, if this... Yeah. Yeah.
What? Go
ahead. It's ridiculous. Like, I just think it's just ridiculous. Like, at some point, again, it'll never happen, in my opinion, but somebody has to make an example out of another individual.
By the way, speaking of making an example, Kalani Sitake, the exact opposite of DJ Durkin, looks out for his kids. Francis Bernard is now a Utah Ute in the program, eligible. Added him to the defense. I'm telling you, the Pac-12 South is going to be sitting there for the taking. And the Utes are going to have a chance to win the South because they're so good defensively. And it looks like they're stacked offensively as well. If they can get some better quarterback play and this defense, it's the Utes. I learned this lesson the hard way. You never question Kyle Whittingham's defense. And now that he adds Bernard from BYU, look out. Remember I said that on August 13th, that the Utes are going to be on the field with a chance to win the South. Will it happen? I don't know. But, boy, they're good defense. Their linebackers, forget it. Their linebackers, Hanson, Barton, their linebackers are really good. Really, really good. And in college football, if you got somebody that'll step into that hole and make a play, which they do, they got guys lined up to do that, you're going to win games. And they're athletic enough on the outside to hang with the USCs of the world. Now, Khalil Tate, maybe he is the Heisman Trophy winner this year, and maybe Herm Edwards pulls his head out of his recruiting ass and all of a sudden they get crazy. I don't know. I don't think so. I'm telling you. Chip Kelly at UCLA, I don't know. I don't think so. Not this year. I think this is a year. If the Utes are going to win the South, they got to do it now. Having said that, can we talk a little TV? I don't feel like ripping James Harden today.
Okay.
James Harden and his friends got in a fight in Scottsdale. James grabbed a woman by the wrist. No, just 30 seconds. James Harden and his friends got into a fight in a nightclub in Scottsdale, Arizona. He grabbed a woman who was filming the fight by the wrist, took her cell phone, and threw it on the roof of the building. Then paid her not to sell the tape that was on the phone to TMZ. That didn't work because TMZ got the tape anyway. Now he's named in a police report. He's probably going to get sued. James Harden's a dummy. I like his shoes. Speaking of shoes, shoes or TV?
TV, I guess.
All right, Ghost Adventures. I'm tired of watching Ghost Adventures with other people.
No, it's not with other people. It's with haters.
Okay, haters. Because your girlfriend and my wife, we're both being like peanut gallery folks on Ghost Adventures last night. I'm trying to enjoy some REM pots going off. I'm trying to enjoy like some voices in the background. I'm trying to enjoy EVPs and, you know, no. I can't because the peanut gallery is mocking me. Okay? I 100% believe in ghosts.
I just have one question for people who hate.
Yes.
Let's say you step into that house all alone for the entire night.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think so. I didn't think so either. No, I didn't think so.
I believe in ghosts.
Me too.
And I'm excited that, you know, coming up here in what, 6 days, Ghost Adventures is all new. Because it's been extra pulses. It's been like repeats.
I still enjoy them.
I'm looking forward to an all new episode of Ghost Adventures this weekend on Travel Channel. And I'm going to watch it, and it's probably going to be in solitude. I will probably just, you know.
Well, we can't watch it together now?
No. 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 You stay there. I'll stay here. You just do your thing. Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
So do I. Catfish better or worse without Max?
Worse.
Okay. Max is off of Catfish because he's producing movies now.
He's too cool for Catfish. He's above it.
Probably. But I'm going to tell you this right now. I love that show. Max and Neve on Catfish, love that show. Catfish essentially is people who fall in love with somebody they've never met and who refuses to video chat on phone, but they talk and text on the internet. They've never met them. They fall in love. And it turns out, usually, hey, look at me. I'm a 6'2" stack bro with a six pack. And it turns out you're like 5'9", you're 400 pounds, and your fingers are greasy from chicken.
Hey, bro, you need the cut.
Yeah, you're looking a little soft. You need the cut. But the point is, you turn out to be somebody that you're not, or you're a girl, or what. I mean, it's terrible, right? Max and Neve make that fun. Neve and his wife don't make that fun. They've been pushing his wife into the show a lot more. And now that I see that Max has stepped away, my guess is that, you know, Neve's wife is going to step in here. She drives me crazy and I won't watch the show anymore. I won't. I'm not going
to
do it.
PSA to everybody.
It's like Chanel West Coast on Ridiculousness. I had to take
that
a break.
Laugh is patented,
I had to take a break from you because she drove me a little crazy. Had to unfollow her on Instagram because she drove me a little crazy. You know, pumps and a bump weren't enough with that chick.
What's worse, her laugh or the LeBron 15 low? 16 low, excuse me.
So we're going to go to shoes now. LeBron 15 low. I needed a new shoe. We've talked about this for a month now. My LeBron, I think they're LeBron 10 watermelons. Air Max, great basketball shoe, but it's just worn out, right? So I went with a LeBron 15 low, all black. And it is one of the worst shoes I've ever played in. It is not uncomfortable. It just has zero heel cup and no lateral support. And it's just like I was shooting. We were warming up before we played 4-on-4. And so I was rapidly shooting, getting rebound, pass back, shoot again. And I went to take a step back and my ankle rolled and I tweaked my knee a little bit. And it's because there's no lateral support in there. And so I didn't trust it. And so essentially what I did is I wound up getting the Paul George 2.5, the gold with black. So we'll see. It's supposed to be here in time for me to play in it this weekend. We'll see. But the LeBron 15 low, I'm going to return that. That's not a good shoe to play in.
Don't blame you.
Yeah. And we saw when I was in Arizona a couple weeks ago, we saw a guy break an ankle wearing that shoe.
On my foot.
Was that on your foot? I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped on your... Ooh.
So what happened was I was on defense, he was on offense, and he tried to crash the boards.
We were playing 4-on-4.
Yeah.
And this is a 7-footer that's probably 150 pounds. He was a beanpole,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. So he's coming in, and he just didn't pick his foot up enough. So his pinky toe of the shoe caught the outside of my left foot.
Oh, that's the worst.
And so he just went flying, caught his foot, and he broke that off.
And there was a snap. You heard it.
Oh, yeah, he broke it off.
There was a snap. He broke his ankle. I mean, it blew up. It was gnar. He was writhing in pain. Like, I mean, it was terrible.
That's what happens, though.
Yeah. Thankfully, I can't jump at all, so usually I don't have those problems.
But I don't think even in a different shoe, I'm not sure that the shoe would have saved him. But the LeBron, in my opinion, is not... It's the LeBron is a shoe that got way overhyped.
Well, it does not have a wide footbed.
But his shoe's never been a great lateral shoe, in my opinion. Even the 10. The 10
low.
Oh,
the 10 was... But, the 10's but like, a good shoe.
It's a good shoe, but it's not a great lateral shoe. It's a great shock shoe. It's a great save-your-knees kind of shoe.
I have never had a complaint about that until it went away. The problem with the LeBrons now is that the footbed's not wide. So it's got incredible traction. You can cut really well in it. You know, like... It's a good shoe. If you don't like to jump, if you're on the floor all the time, it's a good shoe. But I actually do jump. I do rebound. I do shoot three. I do shoot jump shots. I do drive to the rack. I have to trust my shoe. Like the Harden Volume 2, I completely trust that
shoe. Love that shoe.
I completely trust it. I think this PG 2.5 is going to be fine for me. I do. I think it's got a strap on it. It's a mid, not a low. I'm looking forward to that shoe.
Yeah, it's a good-looking shoe. And a lot of people are wearing it. And that's one thing I go by, too. If you see a lot of guys wearing the shoe, you know it's a good shoe.
But I haven't seen the 2.5 yet. I've seen the 2. But this 2.5 with the strap and the gold, and I really like the way that shoe looks. They changed the sole a little bit. The PG3 coming out. By the way, wait. The new Kobe AD. And if, again, follow me on Twitter, there are pictures of it. And on my Instagram, there are pictures of it. Both of them are on the Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, the Monty Show.
I like it a lot.
Kobe walked into the Drew yesterday and took a seat on the sideline. And people freaked out over that shoe. It looks like a kid's carnival shoe to me. Like, I mean, it is, I don't love the colorway that they released.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the colorway either. But I'm not talking about the colorway. I'm not going to buy that colorway.
That's the only one I've seen. I need to see.
You know there's going to be like 10, 12 different colorways coming out eventually. Like,
and I'm not a huge Kobe AD fan anyway.
Yeah.
But everything's going, like the newest Kevin Durant, I hate that shoe. I've never been a KD guy. After the 5, the KD 5, I just have stopped wearing KDs altogether. I really got into the bronze. The Hyper Dunks have really come a long way in my opinion. The Flyknit Hyper Dunk is an elite shoe. I want to like the Kobes. I do. But I haven't seen a Kobe recently that says, yeah, you got to try that shoe. And even the, what is it, the NXT?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even like that shoe that much. Not that I would buy it. That's $200. I can't do that. Like, I was talking to a guy at the gym this morning. Like an idiot, I got up at 5 o'clock and went and worked out. Why did I do that? And I'm going to do it again tomorrow. But he had on the Vapor Max, $220 shoe. He's like, it's not worth $200. He's like, the Air Max is better. It's like, damn. Like, that's what I'm saying. This LeBron was $150. The PG 2.5 is $100. It's a much better price.
I like the Mamba Instinct.
Yeah.
It's $100.
Yeah, it's $100. It is $100. Yeah, I guess that's it. We going to talk about fully electric cars today?
Nah.
Now you're good with it?
Mm.
All right, fine. We'll talk about Tesla and fully electric cars tomorrow. You know, will we ever have a culture where every car is fully electric?
I hope not.
That's what we'll talk about tomorrow on the show. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.